Welcome to the Beyond Jiu-Jitsu podcast. This is episode 165. I'm your co-host, Kieran Lefebvre, and I'm joined by the one, the tall, the Adam Childs.
Hello, everyone. My name's Adam Childs, and I don't like bananas. that makes no sense. That's a reference to a conversation Kieran and I were having 30 seconds ago. I do like bananas. Don't hate me. Yes. We are here. Thank you for listening to the Beyond Jiu-Jitsu podcast. I swear we talk about jiu-jitsu stuff sometimes, but most of the time, bananas. But I was speaking to some people over the weekend about a podcast, not this podcast, but about
a good one.
a good one. And made me kind of think, like, how niche can your podcast be? Because, I mean, our demographic, it's not like a lot of people do jiu-jitsu. It's not that niche. Like, there's a lot of topics to talk about within jiu-jitsu. Like, no matter how niche the sport is, you know, there's a lot to talk about inside jiu-jitsu. And it was this person's brother-in-law who had, I don't know if he, no, he didn't quit his job. He got made redundant. So unfortunate for him, happens to a lot of people, but he got made redundant and is now thinking he's going to make it in podcasting, which isn't the thing that makes you go like, oh, it can be tough, like as in to make money from it. Not everyone goes, becomes Joe Rogan. But, you know, again, some people say, I'm going to go make it as an actor, and you go, oh man, tough industry. And then they do make it. So whatever. But then obviously the next natural question was, okay, what's the podcast about? And he was like, oh, Prince, as in the singer Prince. And I was like, that's a very limited, like it's a very small subject. Like how many podcast episodes can you do before you're like, how much is there to talk about Prince? Like, I know he's very culturally important, but surely that's not a limitless episode podcast.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll see your Prince and raise you another podcast that I stumbled across called the Howler Pod. And it is a podcast about not books, but just the book series Red Rising. It's
oh, really?
Yeah, they're super niche and they're bigger than us.
Well, the book is better than us, so I mean, like,
yeah. Very good. Funny. So last episode for my Something Interesting, I mentioned that I really like the book series Red Rising, and there's there's multiple podcasts dedicated just to that series. Howlerpod is just one of them. There is multiple.
Well, I guess with like that sort of stuff though, like you could quite easily have a infinite episodes. Like once you open the can of worms of like fan fiction and stuff, like, you know, could be limitless. But anyway, I don't know.
I think the Howlerpod's podcast structure is they'll do rereads of the series. So they'll read the series and then reread it with their audience, not like as an audiobook, but they'll do it chapter by chapter and then do a podcast on every single chapter. So they'll read the chapter and then talk about the chapter. And then, so it's like a read along.
Yeah. Right. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, very.
Or maybe, yeah. You know, maybe that's what he's doing with Prince. He plays a Prince song, then they talk about the song, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
shit. But anyway, so then, you know, I was kind of being like, okay, that's pretty crazy. But even crazier, apparently before Prince died, Prince found out about this dude and his podcast and like flew him over to New York to like meet with him. And I was like, what? Like, you know,
wait, hang on a minute. So this podcast already happened.
No, I don't know. I haven't Googled it, but apparently like, I guess so. Or somehow Prince found out that this dude has a Prince podcast or wants to have a Prince podcast. I don't know, but Prince flew him to New York to meet with him and talk with him. I was like, what? Well, okay. So at least he's got some legs to stand on with his podcast. Maybe he is going places. I don't know. But
I'm so confused. Hang on. So it started with a friend of yours has a friend who made redundant.
No. My, My friend's brother-in-law got made redundant.
Okay, your friend's brother-in-law got made redundant and wanted to start a Prince podcast. And then Prince found out about the podcast and flew him, which he hasn't made yet, and flew him to New York to talk to him to make an episode for the podcast.
Yeah, well, yeah, sort of. Like, I don't know. What the fuck? No, I'm assuming that the Prince podcast somehow, some iteration of it, I'm assuming existed prior to him being made redundant. And he right. got made redundant and was like, I'm going all in on the podcast. I'm assuming is how it played out. You know, and all right. then well, somehow, shit. Anyway.
Anyway, Prince 5 minutes podcast. Of Prince. I feel like I just sat through an episode of Prince podcast.
Yeah. How good was it, right?
It was so good.
anyway,
this is why we have timestamps. People just skip to the fucking timestamp.
Six minutes in, we'll get. That's a quick intro for us, though, guys. 6 minutes. Yeah. So intro over. Let's talk about. So what we've been working on for those who are new, as in the maybe not listened 10 episodes or so back. We do every 10 episodes, 65, 75, 85, 95, so on. We do what we've been working on. So Kieran and I are big believers and advocates for the importance of deliberate training, walking into the gym and knowing what you're working on, what you're, you know, whether it's a technique or position, what have you. And, you know, I split that up typically into 3 month blocks for me. So come the end of the year, I've had 4 areas that I can look back on and have improved upon, hopefully. But we do it every 10 episodes. So that's usually every 10 weeks, you know, give or take a 3 month period. Obviously, the last couple of weeks, if you listen to the last 1 or 2 episodes, I have been working on nothing because my knees all, you know, gone to shit again. But anyway, and Kieran's been injured as well. However, prior to that, so I've only missed the last 2 weeks of what I've been working on. Prior to that, I was working on wrestle-ups, actually, which is definitely not in my wheelhouse if you've ever met me personally. I think I've probably trained jiu-jitsu for more years. I'm just looking at my fingers now as if I was counting it out. I've probably trained jiu-jitsu for more years than I have shot double legs, I reckon. Like, I mean, wrestling is not my thing. So quite funny to think that's what I decided to spend sort of 3 months working on. But before I continue, I do want to ask, because you casually said you hadn't been working on much, Kieran, but do you have a chunk that you, or do you have something that you were working on? Because your injury is way older than mine. So my injury only happened 2 weeks ago, but correct me if I'm wrong, but your injury only happened like 1 or 2 weeks, like not long after the previous what we were working on, correct? So you
I haven't had much time, yeah.
No, so I just wanted to double check before I got like 10 minutes in and you're like, we should tell the people what I've been working on. No, but yeah, so you've unfortunately been injured for this whole past, let's just call it 3 months.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I had 2.5 months uninjured. So
yeah.
Again, for people who are new, the format of this is, yeah, it's like slightly educational, but it's not necessarily the purpose for these episodes. It's more of a, you know, just sharing the experience that I've had and what I've personally learnt from focusing on this particular area for 3 months. And I always give the example that I did it years ago with bearing bolos, that at the end of my 3 month block, like I was better at them and whatever, but still got to a point where I thought, I don't really enjoy them and nor am I particularly good at them, nor they don't really like fit in with my current game. And yeah, so that was a good 3 month block. I got better at them, but anyway, on to the next one. So it's by no means I'm now an expert at wrestle ups. Okay. It's just where I've come, where I am today, opposed to where I was 3 months ago. So, yeah, wrestling has never been something I've been particularly good at. Although I've been told I'm quite difficult to take down. Like I've been told I'm quite good defensively in wrestling. And again, I'm not necessarily talking college wrestling. So I don't want any like college wrestlers, if you are, you know, happen to be listening, thinking, I bet I could take you down. Yeah, you probably fucking could take me down. But I just mean as a whole, like in casual conversation, people would be like, man, because you're really long and it's very hard to get past your frames and whatever, and really hard to get your legs because once you sprawl, they go so far back and whatever. Like, so I've been told I'm quite hard to take down, but I'm really, really bad at wrestling. And that definitely, you know, translated into being really poor at, even before wrestling up was a thing, even just variations of sit up guard and stuff was not really my strength. And my neck is like, I've got a massive giraffe neck, very easily guillotined and, you know, arm triangled and north south choked. All these chokes lock in very easy for me, you know, whereas some people, they tuck their chin and their chin is, you know, they're, you know, yeah, exactly. Like their shoulders are instantly up above their fucking eyebrows, whereas that's not the case for me. Yeah, I tuck my chin and someone looks at me like, what are you trying to do? Like I don't, you know, still.
Yeah. It helps when you don't have a neck.
Yeah, that's right. But I decided to pursue wrestle ups. Because, you know, sweeps were never really an issue for me in the gi. I mean, I don't want to say an issue as in I can sweep anyone, but like it was never like a clear sticking point for me that stood out in my progression of jiu-jitsu that I was bad at sweeping people from guard. You know, obviously everything needs work, but it was never the one that kind of thought like, oh, you know, oh, I can submit everyone when I play guard, but I can't sweep them or anything. In the gi, it was never an, never an issue. But in no gi, it became an issue where I, you know, had a, could have a difficult guard to pass, but felt like I lacked a lot of sweeps. Like if I couldn't get the one or two sweeps I was good at, or if I couldn't get the one or two submissions I was good at or whatever, I needed more. I needed more like offense from playing guard. And yeah, wrestle ups just seemed to be the one that naturally fit my no-gi guard game, which is essentially kind of half guard, Z guard. I mean, really the kind of hate using this word. I find it a bit cringy, but like the meta that everyone is doing currently, which if you look at the current no-gi in 2023, 2024, it's predominantly half guards and variations of hook guards. So it's any sort of combination of those two. It's like a half guard or a Z guard or a butterfly half or butterfly guard. And, you know, yeah, like X guard kind of still exists, but really it's more, you know, just to get to that leg entanglement position and whatnot. So it kind of felt natural to add something to that, because what I already did really well playing a half guard or some type of butterfly guard was my ability to kind of do choi bars, which we spoke about in the previous, what we're working on, as well as enter in under the legs, you know, for a reference, just look at, you know, any sort of entry into the legs from half guard onto the far leg. Craig's very well known for doing it and multiple other people. But yeah, then really sort of if those two didn't work, I would be like, well, like where do I go from here? I don't have any of the sleeves and stuff and whatever. And a sweep that I really enjoy and do really well in the gi from either half guard or reverse Stella Heaver is passing the lapel through your opponent's legs. And you have this really nice ability with that lapel, not only to make the knee cut really difficult for them, but you have a whole heap of added a whole extra lever to be able to like shuck them forward up past your head. So it makes it really easy to turn to your knees and wrestle up. So I kind of wanted to add that to it, which is why I initially chose wrestle ups. The first thing I found was, unfortunately, I was still at the same place pretty much. I left the idea of sitting up in jiu-jitsu back when I was a blue belt, which means there was a whole lot of like sitting up and just getting guillotined straight away. When it comes to that though, and this is something people can take to implementing any new sort of skill or technique or whatever, everything has its inherent risks positionally, you know, and the pros and cons of it. So I think it can take a while for some people to get on board with that. When you shoot a single leg or a double leg or you wrestle up, the risk of a guillotine never goes away. Like it is always, it's always there. The same way that doing an over underpass, the risk of like a triangle is always there. Like it always exists. It's just the more that you do it, the more experience you get at it. Like no matter how many times someone tells you, like it's not like all of a sudden if Jordan Burroughs comes along or John Danaher comes along or fucking Nicky Rod comes along, whoever it is, and they say, oh, put your head here and you won't get guillotined. Like that's not automatic, and the intuition and the guy moves a little bit and your adjustments and, you know, like you can't shoot a double leg and say it's impossible to get guillotined if you do it this way. Like that's just not how it works, right? But obviously you get someone like Nicky Rod or Gordon Ryan, and the chance of them getting guillotined on it is super slim. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, I think that's something you have to be on board with. So obviously, and this is a lesson that was drilled into me when I was at blue belt, and I was this exact position that now I've come to feel really confident in. I was training with Michael Lange years ago. Yeah. And I would have been blue belt, and this was in the gi, or maybe it was even no gi actually. Anyway, so long ago. And I was essentially trying to sit up on a single leg from half guard reverse de la Riva. And I think I tried it like 5 times in 1 minute, and he guillotined me every single time. Hmm. And he said something along the lines of like, man, don't be discouraged. You know, you're going to get better at not getting guillotined and not having your head in the wrong position, or when they put, or your head's in the right position, they push it to the wrong position, and then you make the adjustment to do whatever. And, you know, you're only going to get better at that if you continue trying. And obviously, it's not all figured out by yourself. Like, you know, obviously coaches and teammates help you. But yeah, so I first started with sit with just sitting up as you normal, as any white or blue belt would think about. And I kind of had zero success with it. The first point I would make, so now, sorry, I know there's been a lot of rambling as to get to why I've made this decision, but I've just got a few points that are very tangible things for anyone who's wanting to potentially wrestle up that I think are really valuable ways to think about it, that to help you. So the first was that I realized that you need to, at least for me, okay, and this again, this is coming from someone who does jiu-jitsu and doesn't, like, I don't have a wrestling background. Like, so this, you might, if you're sitting here talking, you might have your jiu-jitsu coach who did 10 years of wrestling in high school and college or whatever. They might have a completely different approach. I'm talking from someone who is trying to add wrestling up from purely a jiu-jitsu point of view. I found that for me, there was no, I don't want to say I had to set it up, the ability to set up, but I had to create the moment. Like I couldn't simply just, like with some other sweeps, you can just kind of attempt it, you know, without necessarily having to set them up or lay this elaborate trap. You know, like let's say, for example, someone is in your, not knee shield as in half guard, but let's say like knee shield from open, from closed guard, like you were closed guard there on your knees, you kind of opened your guard and you've got that, like you can kind of just go for a scissor sweep, you know, or if it's closed guard, you could kind of just go for a hip bump sweep, so to speak. And there's not a real big cost of it failing, you know, majority of the time. Obviously, would it be great if you can always lay a trap and set them up and bait them? Yeah, but you know what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Some sweeps or techniques or positions, you can kind of just go for them.
Yeah.
And the risk in a failed attempt is really minimal. Whereas for me, I found just going for a wrestle up, the risk was really high of someone pouncing on my neck or dast choking me, right? So I found I really had to set it up. And in the simplest way, in the very simplest way, because I was already doing the choi bars and entry in onto the far legs quite well, that it became quite natural if I was attacking those and someone was defending them by means of just keeping them really far away from me, it completely opened up the near side for that wrestle up. Right. And I'll try explain for you the technique way I was doing it, which was essentially a reverse arm drag in terms of the grip. So a regular arm drag is like same side wrist and then to the armpit. Mm-hmm. Imagine you're playing half guard and you want to arm drag, you know, the arm that's closest to you, like that grip's a bit backwards, right? For you to hit that arm drag. It's a little bit backwards. Like it's a little bit hard for you to be lying on your left side, but then also reach with your left arm to that cross armpit to do an arm drag. Yep. You know, it's a little bit awkward. So I would typically do the opposite grip. I would just go cross grip on the wrist and same side on the tricep. But the key detail that I found and the key couple of points that I found in combination with this idea of, well, I'm attacking this side and if I can't get it, I'm going to go this side, which is a very basic concept that I think most people who have trained more than, you know, a year are starting to implement to their jiu-jitsu. You know, if I want to go left, I'll go right first and then go left or vice versa. So they're being a bit cagey with the choi bar leg entry side. Not only would I then go for this reverse grip arm drag, I would really kind of arch myself away first. So that was the first thing I would do. Think if you were half guard on the bottom and you were like tucked in because you were trying to get, I don't know, in underneath them to deep half or something. Mm-hmm. But then you feel them start attacking a dast choke, so you arch your back away, yep. Right? Yep. So that's what I would do. I would arch away because the more I would arch away, the more less space. Not only the more space, but the distance I would then have to move their arm across my center line became far smaller.
Yeah.
Because if I'm wanting to arm drag it across so I can sit up, yeah, like I either need to move it, you know, 20 centimeters across my body, or if I arch away 10 centimeters, I've then only got to move their arm 10 centimeters, you know, to get it across my center line.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing I would do because I would be typically tucked in looking for the choi bar in that far arm. And the second I've ditched, I wouldn't simply just then switch to arm drag and sit up. I would do this big, like, you know, lower back extension to really arch away as I would drag it. Okay. So they're the first sort of two things.
So question here. So you've got the cross grip on their wrist, right? And then you reach up for their tricep and then you arch away once you have the grip.
Like all at once, really.
Right. Yeah. So you just know, grab like the arm with just two on one, effectively their arm, arch away and pull them forward. And then you sit up.
They wouldn't even notice that there's a two on one. Like the grips are so minimal. You may as well think, at least in the arm drag I'm doing, you may as well think of the arm drag the same way, you know, a boxer or a striker might like just parry away a punch, you know,
like, that makes sense.
You know, think of the way a boxer might just like, or I don't know if this technically falls under dirty boxing, I'm not sure, but you know how they might like, you know, instead of throwing the jab, they'll kind of like pull down on the person's wrist or glove to then throw their punch. So they're not really like making a grip and like pulling it down. It's just this, they're like swatting it away.
Yeah. So effectively you're arching away and then like almost throwing. It's almost like an arm throw.
It's almost like a slap. It's almost like slapping it across, right?
Yeah. And then you come up and then go for their lat or something, or how do you
no, ref off so, from there? So then here's the third bit of that, this like first sort of realization thing I had, which was I would then almost exclusively sit up with my head to the outside. So I very rarely, like I really kind of stopped wrestling up with my head to the inside, kind of under their chin. I would sit up with my head to the outside straight away and sit up fast. Okay. So this segues into the next point that was really one of the crucial details for me, which was, and keep in mind, this is coming from half guard. I'm going to address a little bit later wrestling up from, you know, seated guard or from someone just like standing in front of you and you kind of don't really have grips and that. And I'll address that in a second. So this is just from half guard. So my opponent's on their knees. If you recall back to when you did the John Danaher seminar, and he showed some arm drag variations. And I don't know if you recall a specific detail he mentioned in what is the most, a couple of the most valuable, what's the most valuable sort of metrics to measure for who's going to win the race that ensues after back exposure?
Head height.
Head height and hip height. Yeah. Right? Exactly. So, you know, John Danaher mentioned this with arm drags that like you, so long story short, he taught this arm drag variation where you actually, from butterfly guard, if you think of the regular one and you end up with one hook in, he showed this one where you actually don't end up with a hook in. You take the hook out, but it's much faster and you end up creating way more back exposure at the cost of a hook. But because your head is higher than your opponent's head and your hips are higher than your opponent's hips, you nine times out of 10 should win the ensuing scramble that that back exposure has created. So I kind of took that and ran with it. Unfortunately, you don't really win the hip height race because they're half guard on their knees, right? Yep. But I would do this combination of, you know, like really arching away, like arching away and then slingshotting up super fast as I would swat that arm across. You know, so if you could track my upper body, it would kind of look like it, you know, went from, let's say like it arched away from 3 o'clock back to 12 o'clock, but then from 12 o'clock, that hour hand just slung shot, you know, came forward straight out of the clock from 12 to 6. You know, it didn't go the long way around from 12 to 6. It went over the top of the clock, you know. So I would arch away and then whack and sit up super fast with my head to the outside because then my head was higher and I would always win the race that would come from there. Okay, that's – they're the
– those. Wait, sorry, are you taking your hook out or you're leaving your hook in?
No, no, my hook's staying in, right?
Yeah.
And with and because I don't care, like I started looking at it not too dissimilar from the way that John Danaher explained the arm drag. I'm not really – I don't really care about taking the back. I mean, it's great if you do. I'm more just looking at that back exposure. And that back exposure usually then results in me either taking the back or them attempting to square up and then me getting the sweep.
Yeah.
But the fact that my head is to the outside and I'm my head's above their head and essentially above their shoulders as well, like I'm not getting guillotined. A guillotine's not even on the table anymore, right? So I've just sat up so far past them. That alone, essentially those kind of two main things, I know I mentioned more than two, but the whole understanding that for me and my skill level of a wrestle up, I had to set it up in a, I had to create a reaction sort of thing. And then sitting up super fast to just get my head higher than their head, that meant that already made it a massive, massive improvement for me. Not just like a little improvement, like huge. Went from me not being able to, you know, I don't know, wrestle up on a blue belt to then being able to wrestle up on other black belt friends of mine. You know, like complete different, just those things.
It's really interesting the way you're describing it with if you take out that subtle shift, like the reverse arm drag, as you're calling it, this does sound like an arm drag setup from half cut.
Yeah. I mean, I guess on its, yeah. Like I'm not trying to rename anything or
No, I'm not saying you're doing that. Like I'm just like, I'm putting it into context for my own mind when you mentioned John Danaher, I was already thinking about that specific arm drag because I'd already noticed similarities in the setup, except obviously in that position, you're in butterfly, you're in a more seated posture, you're not on your side in half guard. So it is easier to get access to that far arm, like the cross grip onto the armpit, right? Whereas you're on your side. And I agree with you that it would be very difficult to reach up and get effective leverage. Even if you did get it, you don't really have too much power.
It's super, it's like awkward.
You don't have power. But in your case, by saying you're taking like the opposite wrist grip and then using it as almost like a throw by, it is very similar to the setup from butterfly.
Yeah, like if someone knows the exact John Danaher butterfly arm drag sweep Kieran and I are referring to, I could just very easily explain this to you as, yeah, it's essentially that from half guard.
Yeah.
It's really not that different. It's just a couple of the big points for me were, yeah, I guess making that connection to head height and head to the outside. There's nothing wrong with wrestling up with your head to the inside. Heaps of people do it all the time, right? But for me, it just wasn't gelling. And also, again, it's not a revolutionary thing to think you have to set up a technique, but I guess it was just in the initial learning phase, I was just trying to wrestle up the same way you might just scissor sweep or hip bump, you know, there's no risk if you fail or whatever. Mm. And then, you know, I quite quickly learned that for me and, you know, again, there might be wrestlers telling me, no, you get good enough at it. You can do it whenever. That may be the case, but not for me where I sit today.
I have a question. Mm. Where do you find this position results in most of the time? Do they then concede guard and then you end up, you know, in almost like a reverse position and they're in half guard now?
Yeah, usually one of three. Usually they try square up. And it results in a sweep. Ideally, I don't mind landing in half guard, you know, like it'd be great to land in mount or something, but I'll take half guard, especially if it's half guard chest to chest or something, I'll take that. So it's usually results in a sweep kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Results in, you know, me being able to end up in turtle with a hook in and a seatbelt and attack the back.
Yep.
Or third results in, you know, as they attempt to square up, me insisting on chasing the back and like rolling through with a truck hook or something like that to continue to chase the back. It's usually one of those three. Like if it's not one of those three, I've usually been shut down earlier than that.
Because the reason I ask is I was mapping the position to the Danaher, you know, the butterfly arm drag we're just talking about. And most of the time after I hit that on someone once, I end up, they end up just conceding immediately, like identify that they just got done. Instead of going to turtle, they end up flipping to their back and conceding the sweep. And it results in a half guard after a minor scramble. So I was just trying to map this position and see what the result would be. And I imagine pretty much the same thing, either the concede of half guard attacking turtle, or if, like you said, you can chase it as well.
Yeah, exactly. So that the combination of that whole sort of, you know, chunk of rambling was the first kind of real, okay, I put all these pieces together and this wrestle up works really well for me. Okay. The second kind of different point, but point I want to make is that it doesn't always have to be pretty. And what I mean by that is, you know, a wrestle up doesn't have to be this amazing, this amazingly beautiful sat up on some single leg and then that turned into a high crotch and you dumped them on their head. Sometimes, let's say now I find myself in a position where the person has been shutting down my entry to the legs, shutting down my choi bars, being a bit more aware to the fact that I want to wrestle up and whatever on that arm drag side. I found the opportunity to wrestle up in the most simple way, which was simply shoving the person and sitting up, literally just shoving them and chasing them up. Because I found a lot of the time the very uneven distribution of their base when they're trying to shut all these things down, I could often catch a moment where I could just sit up and literally just shove them, like you see people in the movies, like shove a person in a bar or something, literally just shove into their chest with obviously my other hand would be, if I'm lying on my left side playing half guard, obviously my left hand would be the one that is going to be posting on the ground. So my right hand would literally just shove into their chest or shoulder. And that would be enough for me to what? Not wrestle up on a single leg. I'm not ducking down one of my head on their chest or belly or hip. No, like I would just shove them and wrestle up in a way that sometimes by the time their backs hit the mat, like it's almost as if they're playing seated guard. Like I've just shoved them and essentially stood up, but by sitting forward, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
And I make that point because a wrestle up, and this now starts for me, this is where that ends, because I'm not a wrestler. And I'll mention another point later on, but I'm what I did over the 3 months is really try to find a way to wrestle up with the most minimal amount of wrestling. and what I mean by that is, if we look at guys who are really good at bearing bolos, for example, probably the most, perhaps you could, there could be an argument made for one of the most valuable things that they do is not so much the bearing bolo, but it's their ability to like create the back exposure, right? And then essentially to be able to like put the bearing bolo on the table in the first place by creating the back exposure. In the case of a bearing bolo in the gi, that usually means like getting your opponent's butt to the ground. Mm-hmm. And then from there, they're so far above and beyond their opponent that the bearing bolo eventually comes after multiple inverts and crab rides and this and that and whatever. So that's not me. Right. If we take that to wrestling, someone who's a really good wrestler. So if you look at Nicky Ryan and Nicky Rod and these guys who are really well known for their wrestle ups and their wrestling in jiu-jitsu, they don't necessarily need to do some beautiful wrestle up. All they need to do, and it doesn't matter how they do it, all they need to do is create a scramble. Right? And then from there, they'll usually win. They'll essentially finish the wrestle up because they created a scramble. So like simply just like sitting up and shoving someone, yeah, might not, like that alone might not be a sweep or whatever, but if that forces someone to base step in a way that essentially then starts to blur the lines into a scramble and you're a super competent wrestler, you're going to finish that, right? And then there's your sweep. Mm. For me, it stopped at like the kind of shoving, because I don't want to create a scramble. Again, people who are super competent wrestlers and have done it in high school, college, you might hear that. And maybe for you, that's a light bulb moment where you think, fuck man, if like, okay, I don't know how to enter in on the legs from Z-Guard, but if I try to and then they step a certain way that creates a scramble, there's my wrestle up, right? That I'm sure there's people listening that's all you need. All you need is to create a scramble, and 9 times out of 10, you're going to finish your wrestle up.
That's really interesting. You know? I really like the wrestle up position that I like. It reminds me, I was triggered by it when you said like the just shove and go sort of thing, is when someone is on their knees and I'm playing half guard or Z guard, and they are defending the choi bar and shield, defending, and they sit right back and they sit too far back on their heels. Sometimes I'll just, maybe this is what you were trying in the beginning, where you were getting guillotined, but I just like duck my head and sit up and almost tackle them. You know what I mean? Like almost like a rugby tackle. And surprisingly, that is super effective. It's not quite the shove and create the scramble and go. It's kind of just using the tackle as the shove, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, same idea. The only reason I don't do the tackle, so to speak, is because I'm just trying to minimize for me the likelihood that someone would jump on my neck. Yeah. And I'm quite tall anyway. So, you know, if I can kind of push you, shove you, and start wrestling up in a way where I'm kind of getting my head and my hips above your head. Yeah, like I said, a lot of the time it would end up almost like they would be in seated guard and I'm standing before their backs even hit the mat, because yes, there's a lot of forward drive, but I also really value the vertical drive, because if I'm just a whole bunch higher than you,
you can't
get it. I can't get guillotined. And then, you know, obviously they, depending on the position, they can like drive back into you. But like, if I'm just higher than you, like I'm in little air quotes, I'm on top now. Mm-hmm. Right? Obviously there's more to it than that, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was another really valuable piece for me that, you know, I found with the combination of the arm drag on one side, the choi bar, the trying to get in under the legs. A lot of the time there was just the opportunity, man, to just shove and, you know, sit up and stand up. And, you know, there I was on top. That's a wrestle up. Mm-hmm. So that leads me to then when we look at not half guard and what do we, you know, when we look at seated guard, or, you know, I'm playing seated guard, or I'm lying on my back or whatever, and I've got the person standing in front of me, but like they're not on the knees, they're standing, wrestling up from here. This is one that for me was probably the hardest to incorporate, because it's very hard to sit up from there and it not kind of be a single leg or double leg or something like that.
It really is a wrestle up, not a sweep at that point.
Yeah. So I personally found two solutions for me and in my 3 months of doing it. One was wrestling up on a low single. So for those who aren't aware, a low single is like when you wrestle up a low single, you know, when you see a wrestler, they don't shoot a single, like they shoot and they literally like their shoulder, their trap is connected to the shoelaces of your foot, you know, like they're literally down hugging your ankle. Right. So I would wrestle up, cause then it, you know, of course that had its own teething issues with people crucifixing me or taking my back, because you're essentially like sitting up to turtle but hugging their ankle. Yeah. But, you know, you get better at finishing that position and getting on top from there. But probably the better one that I enjoyed more was again valuing the race to verticality rather than the drive forward. I've spoken before, at least in class, I have. You would have heard me talk about when you wrestle up, on a single, you either wrestle up forwards or backwards. And I give this example of, you know, someone if they're in a push-up position, and you know how far you need to drive to tilt the axis, or you could just pull the leg. Anyway, it's a whole different story. So I didn't want to wrestle up on a single leg. So what I would do is essentially sit up as if it's a single leg, but all I was trying to do was climb my way up your torso. So you could almost imagine like, you know, imagine a drunk person trying to cling to you as they're like slipping down. It was like the opposite of that. Like I'm trying to sit up and climb my way up you to essentially end up like in a body lock standing. Yeah. Because I found if I sat up on a single leg, there was such an opportunity for like getting sprawled on or getting guillotined. But if I valued just like standing up really fast, essentially just sitting up and then just standing straight up with zero drive forward, right? I would often climb up the person and end up, you know, hips to hips, belly button to belly button, and hopefully with double unders. And then I'm in like in a body lock position where I really like to finish a takedown from there, you know, because I've got, you know, such long arms that even when people try to push their hips back, it's really, you know, nice for me to pull their hips in and do that typical walk over the top of them takedown. So kind of connected to the previous realization of really valuing sitting straight up and valuing the who's winning the height battle rather than any sort of like drive forward. And it, you know, made a massive difference for me. Still my lesser favorite position to attempt to wrestle up from, though. The last thing that I think is probably the for anyone who is thinking about incorporating wrestling, a wrestle up into your arsenal and you don't come from a wrestling background, this I think is probably the most valuable bit of information I can give you as to how to think about how to go about implementing wrestle ups. I want you to ask yourself this. If I said to you, Kieran, all right, bro, you and I are going to start standing. You can choose the position you start in, right? Short of having me already off the ground hanging over your shoulder, right? But you can choose, do you want to start with over-unders? Do you want to start with double-unders? Do you want to start with a single leg? Do you want to start with a high crotch? Do you want to start with, you know, you're already behind me in a suplex position? You can choose whatever position you want to start in. If you finish the takedown, I will give you $1 million. And think, what is the position that is your like $1 million on the line? I am finishing this takedown. And make suplex. Sure you're and make sure your wrestle up takes you in that direction.
Okay.
So, and again, I'm like, this is for people who come from a wrestling background. Perhaps you don't need to think about it like this, but for someone like me who was trying to bridge that gap without having to go off and spend the next 5 years doing wrestling, it's like, okay, what is the position that if I'm starting standing and there was $1 million on the line, you know, finish this takedown, you get to choose where you start. For me, where is that? And it's like, well, it's either double unders with a body lock from the front.
Yeah, you're good at
or,
that.
Or it's if I'm behind them with a waist grip.
Yeah.
They're my two more preferred positions to be in. Like, you know, can I finish a single leg? Yeah. But like, would I put $1 million on it? No. Right. Like it's not where I'd want to be. So if you can answer that and make sure all your wrestle ups take you in that direction, I promise you, you're going to have way more success. So if you go all the way back to my first point, it kind of comes full circle. Like not only was I not wanting to get guillotined, the sort of arm drag wrestle up from half guard, every wrestle up I'm doing, I'm trying to get like behind you. Like I'm not really thinking, I think most people kind of look at wrestle up as being synonymous to some degree with like sitting up on a single leg or double leg.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not, and perhaps I did in the past as well. But now I think about, you know, how can it get me to that $1 million position? And for me, that's me behind you, or it's me having a double unders body lock from the front. So my arm drag from half guard, it's about that. Like I'm essentially trying to get behind you. And sometimes it does result in the person defending by standing up and whatever. And I, you know, and I get behind them. Right? I don't want to, none of my wrestle up techniques take me to a single leg or double leg. None of them. Right? They all take me to behind you or to in front of you, but with double unders. And even the shoving one. So when I shove someone and just try sit up and stand up over the top of them, if they stand with me, like I'm getting double unders in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're in that, you front, know, that double under, like you said, hip to hip, belly button position.
Yeah. If I sit up when they're standing and they're, you know, in my De La Riva or open guard, whatever, and I climb myself up their torso like a drunk person, it's to get to double unders, you know, it's to get to that body lock and walk over the top of you.
Mm.
That I think is the best way if you're trying to bridge the gap to think about your wrestle ups. And if you are someone who is your $1 million position would be a single leg or double leg, I think it's just even easier for you. Right. But I personally found that a really valuable way to think about how you should wrestle up. Right. Combine that with some of the other things I said. Some were specific to the way I do it, but some more, you know, just to reiterate another generic bit of advice, put together these two. What's your $1 million position that you would finish your takedown from? Make sure your wrestle up takes you in that position. And while you're figuring out how does that happen, just remind yourself, it doesn't always have to be some pretty amazing fucking technique. You know, those are great, but yeah, like if you just shove them off, balance them and sit up, man, like go for it. But even when I sit up, even the times I do sit up with my head to the inside, I am circling the same way you would if we were standing and I got an underhook and you got a whizzer and we're in that sort of, maybe you're going to do an Uchimata sort of fight.
Mm.
I'm still circling to your back, trying to shuck your whizzer out and whatever, and shuck your arm over my head to get round to your back. I do the same thing when I wrestle up because I don't want anything to do with that single or double leg. You know, of course, sometimes it happens, but as a whole, it's not the direction I go in.
Mm. No, that makes perfect sense. My $1 million position is definitely that seatbelt hip grip from the back and finish that. Like, it's not a suplex, but you know, that mini suplex you teach where it's like the lift and dump, how you close down your elbow. Yeah. Fucking yeah. Love that takedown. It's so satisfying and it's really effective.
Yeah. Yeah. So honestly, if you like that position, think about wrestling up from half guard or whatever it is. And with that in mind, you combine that with everything we spoke about with like the head height and like the John Danaher arm drag and whatever. And you're essentially, you know, close that gap between a wrestle up and just creating back exposure and whatever. And most of the time, as you said, people try to square up and it ends up being a sweep, but that's okay too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think many people wrestle up with the thought that it's anything other than a sweep, right? Like no one wrestle ups thinking I'm going to submit them on my way up. I don't think, right. Like, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it's now for me, I think it kind of really plugged plenty of holes in my game, but it definitely plugged what was maybe not a hole, but in my game, as in it was a position that people were exploiting, but it definitely fixed a problem I had that was, you know, when I'm playing guard in no gi, I often found myself stuck in a bit of a, they're not passing and progressing, but you know, my go-to attacks aren't working. Like I need another tool on my tool belt from this position. And for me, it really fucking added to that.
Yeah. Like that, you know, when you get in those positions where it's just frustration because no one's progressing, they're not progressing, but you're not being able to submit them. And it's kind of like something that maybe in the future you can pull out when you've reached that critical point of, instead of sitting there frustrated for 3 minutes and being annoyed, try a new avenue.
Yeah. And I mean, to now it's not even necessarily like, I'm getting frustrated, so I'll try this. Like now, depending on how my opponent is moving, it'll be like the go-to technique I potentially go to straight away. You know, I'll straight away be looking to set up that kind of wrestle up movement. Like I feel real comfortable with it. And, you know, and just the intuition that has come with their head position and my head position and knowing when I'm going to be able to swat that arm across and just sit up really quickly. I've come to enjoy it. So it's funny that I think I've come to enjoy wrestle ups with still having not to do not needing to do single legs or double legs. So I'm,
wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Without wrestling.
Yeah. I'm going to call this episode "How to Wrestle Up for Non-Wrestlers."
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. How to Wrestle Up for Non-Wrestlers. I think it works. I was speaking to a student recently about it, and just the last point I made, you know, that $1 million question example I gave for him was like, yeah, you know, really, mate, because he was having a similar thing, just kind of sitting up and getting guillotined. And yet when you watch him in training, he never shoots single legs or double legs or anything. It's like, man, you know, think about it like this, you know, without, because it was just a passing question. He wasn't asking for a specific technique or anything. So just think about it like this. If you can, you know, what's your $1 million position you would like to find yourself in and head in that direction. Yeah. Like for me, it's the more valuable one is me getting behind you with that waist grip. So of course my head's always going to be to the outside. Like that's, you know, it's a no brainer if I want to be behind you.
But that's a really interesting meta theme that you can apply to, you know, jiu-jitsu in general. And it really helped me when I was learning over-unders, and you posed a similar question to me, like figure out where you want to be. What's the best position where you know you can pass? What position do you need to be in to guarantee your pass from over-under? Okay, here it is. Now figure out as many ways as you can from wherever you are just to get there. If you can get there, you can finish. Segmenting your jiu-jitsu in that way, particularly for beginners, when it can be very overwhelming. Like it's very dynamic. It's constantly changing positions. You know, this position is different to the way you know how to do it or whatever. Well, if you think about, you know, anything in that frame, everything becomes a lot easier. And every position you're in, you have a clear goal.
Yeah. And all the best guys do it. They just do it at an incredibly high level. So, you know, if you go watch a Gordon Ryan instructional and it's incredibly detailed and it's very specific. When they do this, you do this and this and this and this and this. It's very specific. But if you look at, let's just say, his passing, for example, to put it in a nutshell, it all revolves more or less around getting chest to chest, you know, and ideally head control with a underhook and inside position with your head is the dream. But you know, essentially all revolves around getting chest to chest and both their shoulders flat on the mat. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're talking about the current best guy in the world. But I mean, if he gets there, it's like it's over. He's 99% of the way past your guard. Doesn't matter what configuration you have on one or both of his legs or whatever it is, like it's kind of over from there. And again, to reference Bering Bolo guys again, a lot of those really top Bering Bolo gi players, no matter where, like it's their ability to keep the fight in Bering Bolo territory. Or it's like a MMA fighter controlling the octagon or whatever it is, you know, the ability to control, to dictate the pace, to dictate what's going on, where the fight's taking place. Oh yeah, Bernardo Faria was very famous for it as well. Like everything he did in competition, if he was on the bottom, his whole game, his entire game was get to deep half. Because if as long as I can get to deep half,
he can sweep.
It's over. I know I'm going to do. And same with on top. It doesn't matter. As all I have to do is get to over under and you're finished. Obviously, you know, years of work for him then to be able to finish the over under and then to finish you once he does pass your guard or whatever. But, you know, on the micro level, that's what's happening. His whole game is like, just get here. And I'm sure there's judo guys that would be the same. They're like, I've just got to get this grip and that grip, and then I'm hitting this throw or whatever. So, yeah, why not apply that to your wrestle-ups as well, especially if you're someone like me who's trying to connect a somewhat new application of a sport that you don't train into your current sport.
Yeah. So I take it from all this, this is not like the Baron Bolo for you. This is something that you're going to keep.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the Baron Bolo was something that I was like, yeah, cool, that was fun. But, you know, yep. I probably do one Baron Bolo a year nowadays. Like, it's just not at all part
like a competency check.
Yeah. It's not at all part of my repertoire, whereas I like to think this is. And I mean, yeah, I mean, in training especially, still, of course, sometimes I might get guillotined or get punished and dust choked for trying to sit up. And, you know, that's just – but, you know, I feel pretty good about where it's come in 3 months of working on something that the start of it, it was the my competency level at it was honestly not too dissimilar to when I was a blue belt trying to sit up on a single leg against Michael Lange. It wasn't too different to that. Whereas now I feel, yeah, went from not being able to wrestle up on blue belts to being able to wrestle up on my black belt friends and, you know, just be way more dangerous from there.
Nice. Well, I learned a lot.
Yeah, still more to work on. Not quite as detailed as my Choi bar, but, you know.
Yes, that was the gold standard.
Yeah.
We got a comment on one of our shorts the other day, one of our YouTube shorts. And it was the one where from an episode a while back where you're talking about listening to podcasts on 2x speed. And the comment was, oh, this is really funny timing because last night I fell asleep listening to your Choi Bar episode on 2x speed. I wasn't sure if it was an insult or a compliment.
Yeah.
But it was funny.
I mean, I'll take it as an insult because it probably was. Sounds more fitting, but
well, they referenced the episode, so they knew what it was, so it's clearly a listener. I don't think
that was a really detailed, like, I got a lot out of the time I spent doing Choi bars. Like, yeah. I really did a lot, whereas like the wrestle ups I feel really good about them, but I also feel like I could spend another 3 month block on them.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
The Choi bar one, I don't know, I just had this, I had an insane amount of self-development and progress in the 3 months that I feel like potentially another 3 months of wrestle-ups, I still wouldn't be at the point where I am with understanding Choi bars. Like it just, I don't know, it just snowballed for me.
Because you're dipping into a whole nother sport, you know what I mean? Wrestling is, like you said, in passing, it's a whole nother sport. And it's easy to forget that because – you know, we're jiu-jitsu guys and it's part of jiu-jitsu now, but yeah.
Yeah. And as well, like people, I think a lot of people disregard the amount of overlap there is as well. You know, oh, I hate takedowns. I don't want to do wrestling, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, like, okay. But, you know, have you ever been on turtle position on top against a wrestler and been able to like consolidate that position, like take their back or like, man, wrestlers are so good at getting out of that position. Like wrestlers are so good at getting out of side control with no jiu-jitsu training. Like wrestlers are so good at, you know, keeping you in side control with no fucking jiu-jitsu training. Like there's so many other things they do so well.
Yeah.
That directly translate to jiu-jitsu. So it's not just the takedown part. I mean, I guess that's the majority
wrestling
of it.
Is you can't ignore wrestling. Like if you are like, that's kind of like ignoring the leg game, you know, in 2024, if you're doing it, you're just missing out a huge part of the sport and you're going to be at a disadvantage at some point.
Yeah.
If you ignore it completely.
Which I guess is also part of the reason why I decided to work on it, even though I went about it in a way that minimized the amount of actual wrestling involved. That I, you know, I think it was a nice bridge that that you know that I built that worked for you know that that already complemented the way that my jiu-jitsu functions and what works well and what doesn't work well. So yeah, I feel pretty good about where it's come to.
Yeah.
No, it's awesome. And like even, you know, I'll give another, just one other one, like that's more of a specific setup for it. But you know how I said like, you know, sitting up and shoving or whatever. And then I said as well, oh, if you're good at wrestling, you might just need to create a scramble or whatever. Let's say you're playing half guard and someone starts to stand up and you transition as if people are unaware, you should, if someone is standing up out of your half guard, you should kind of by default pull in your bottom knee, essentially transitioning to reverse De La Riva by default. It should just be automatic for you to do that. Otherwise you're just giving them a free knee cut. You know, so let's say you're playing half guard and the person decides that they want to kind of back out of it. Like, have you ever been in someone's Z guard and you kind of like, nah, I'm going to try back out to headquarters or something because I don't want to fuck with your Z guard.
100%.
You know, so then how I was adding wrestle ups to that was as they would stand up and pass through my reverse De La Riva, I would essentially just go for the reverse De La Riva version of a tripod sweep, which for those who don't know that, you're holding the ankle, right, from reverse De La Riva. Your other foot goes on the hip that's closest to you, the blade of your foot, and then your reverse De La Riva foot is going to kick out their far leg. And I would do that, but because I was already thinking about it like a wrestle-up rather than a tripod sweep, if the sweep was 100% successful and they just fell over, great. But like kind of all I needed was for them to stumble and I've created what essentially a scramble, right? Like if they've kind of stumbled and tripped over my foot a little bit and I'm on my way to wrestling up, you know, like the tripod sweep failed, but their little like, you know, that one little hook step they needed to take in order to not fall over has now given me all the time, not all the time in the world, but the expression all the time in the world to fucking sit up and wrestle up. You know, and it's, you know, it's just a very basic setup, right? Not very dissimilar to Craig Jones when he taught at the seminar, the false reap entry. It was like kind of, I think he did even the exact same thing. Like you kind of kick them away from reverse De La Riva to get them to back up. That gives you the space to thread the false reap in, right?
Yeah, like, he did.
So, but yeah, anyway, start wrestling up, people. Give it a go. I think it's a... Sometimes it's the easiest sweep you never knew you could do. Like, honestly, sometimes it is, if it's not even on your radar yet, sometimes, and I'm maybe talking more at a more beginner level now, like for depending on the skill level of you and your gym, you know, but like, let's say white, blue, maybe even some purple belts. If you're like a newer or less experienced or whatever practitioner, sometimes it's the easiest sweep you didn't realize was there. To dumb it down, it's literally just kind of sitting up and like and just saying no up, yeah, kind of, yeah, just sit up, stand up and just be like, well, I'm gonna be on top now. And sometimes you realize how easy it is just to like push someone over. Sometimes it is, right, at a more big, you know, beginner level. Oh yeah, I would advise trying it. I'm gonna wrestle up on you when.
Good luck.
Actually, yeah. Kieran's like, good luck getting me on my knees. My knees fucked.
I'll be on my back, bro.
Yeah.
I'll be wrestling up on you.
Yeah. So that's all I got to say on wrestle ups, bro.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing with the team, with the class. Now, I need to ask, do you have something interesting? Because I do.
Okay, right. You go first. Mine's a very quick one, but it's okay. But all yes, right. I have one.
Are you aware of the current controversy with Mikey Musumeci?
Oh, not whatsoever. No.
Okay. Well, this would be good. I thought you might, but many people will be aware of this by now. Mikey Musumeci took to Instagram to call out a popular streamer recently. I believe it was sometime this week on the 11th of January.
Streamer of what?
A Twitch streamer.
Yeah, but like,
oh, he's a variety streamer. mostly talking and reacting to stuff. His name's Sneeko. So he called out this guy called Sneeko. For those that don't know, I wouldn't bother looking him up unless, and if you're a Sneeko fan, apologies, but whatever. He's like,
sounds like Sneeko's about to get shat on.
Yeah, Sneeko's a bit, I don't like Sneeko. I think he's a bit of a fucking loser, to be honest, man. He's like a Andrew Tate clone, like a Wish.com version of Andrew Tate. You know, he's full red pill, you know, that sort of stuff. And, you know, his whole shtick is like calling people out for being soy boys and he's the alpha and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Oh my God. Right?
So it's like that toxic sort of whatever. I'm not a fan. If I mischaracterized him, whatever. But Sneeko like had a clip where he was taking the piss out of Mikey Musumeci. It was when Mikey versed Aoki maybe or someone, I don't know. Or maybe it was that when he blew out the guy's knee. It might have been whatever. He was reacting to a clip of Mikey and in the post-fight interview, Mikey was talking about how, you know, this person was like a inspiration. It's the master becomes, you know.
That would have been against Aoki.
That's why.
Because he submitted him with an Aoki lock.
Aoki lock, yeah. It was also talking about that other dude that he blew out his knee. So I didn't know which one. Anyway, so when he, in the post-fight interview from Aoki, blah, 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 talked about that. And Sneeko saw that clip and was like taking the piss out of him. Mimicking his voice, saying that he's a fucking soy boy and a nerd and a bitch and jiu-jitsu's gay and all this sort of stuff. So the typical stuff like. Mikey, in his straight up autistic fashion, jumped on Instagram and just went on a tirade about how he hates bullies and he's challenging Sneeko to an MMA fight. Sneeko says that he's a boxer, so let's have an MMA fight in one FC. I'll fucking take the bully's lunch money and all this sort of stuff. He's a typical bully. Mikey was mad, dude. He is fucking mad. Like, real mad. Watch the video and he's like not blinking, just staring intently into his camera and just like not yelling, but just fuck, man. He wants to murder this guy. So I would not want to be on the receiving end of that. And Sneeko then replied and was like, oh, I'm a streamer. It's my job to make fun of everything. Like, what the fuck? This guy's a nerd. Like, obviously he would beat me up. I'm not going to fight him. I would lose. And, you know, he's just backpedaling or whatever. But,
Keyboard warriors, man. Well, yeah, like, I guess, you know, fuck. That's funny. I guess at least in Sneeko's defense, he then, like, kind of, it appears on this very limited interaction I've had with this story, at least it appears that he kind of dropped the facade to at least be like, I mean, not apologize, I guess, but at least it's not like he doubled down and, you know, said, I'll fuck you up. Yeah, let's book it in. And then like, you know, the amount of online people who say this and that, and they constantly back that I would do this and that. And
no, I get what you're saying. I think I should clarify in the original clip, Sneeko was reading his chat and someone said, you know, someone obviously who changed jiu-jitsu or knows who Mikey is, said something along the lines of that guy would smash you or something, like he would destroy your knee or whatever. And then Sneeko was like, yeah, he probably would submit me, but you know.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know. It's obviously just, it's well, the meme. I wanted to bring it up because I love Mikey and fuck you, Sneeko.
Yeah, I don't know who Sneeko is, but based on what you said, I'm not a fan of that that persona of influencer, streamer, person. Doesn't interest me. Yeah. So. Yeah. Fuck Sneeko, and I don't even know him. all right. So my something interesting is a very quick one, but I don't know. It kind of made my ears prick up. So I was listening to Hodja Gracie talk, and he said that he has – well, firstly, I learned that he's – never been submitted in competition since he was a juvenile. So, you know, since he was a teenager, he's never been subbed in competition, but obviously said he's been submitted all the time in training, and said this first made me go, really? You know, you're that high level of a competitor and, you know, the one of, if not the best ever. He said, I have never once injured myself because I didn't tap in training, as in I've never once let a submission go too long in training, which I kind of instantly was like, really? Like, I mean, there's, I think there's plenty of times where, you know, cause he said, he's like, man, it doesn't matter. It's training. Like, yeah, you can get mad. You can get frustrated, pissed off at yourself, but just, you know, tap, own up to the fact that you made a mistake and go again, train again, get better. But, you know, I kind of was like, well, I know you've done it heaps of times, but I was like, there's for sure. Yeah. There's plenty of times where, you know, the adrenaline kicks in or, you know, yeah, it's that war of a role with that training partner and there's a, you know, a level of adrenaline and an ego and everything, or there's times where sometimes you just, you know, it's not like intentionally you let the armbar get fully extended, but in that moment you want to see like how deep can you dig, like how far down can you be and still make it out. There's plenty of times where I've tapped in training, or maybe not even tapped. There's plenty of times I've gotten out of a submission and then after class being like, oh fuck, I should just tap to that armbar. Fucking hell, man, my elbow's jacked. You know, like I wouldn't say it's happened hundreds of times, but it's happened. And for sure, there's been times where I've been like, oh my God, I didn't realize how close I was to passing out until, you know, until I got out or whatever. But that's not the something interesting thing. That alone made me be like, really? In all your years of jiu-jitsu, you never once? I wasn't buying that. But then he said, because when you, and then he went on to talk about getting choked out. And he said, because every time you get choked out, your resistance drops to being able to get choked out. And then I was like, really? And then, you know, and then he drew the parallel between like getting knocked out. He was like, look at boxers and MMA fighters.
But it's, you know, completely different.
You'll be, yeah. Like, so it wasn't like he pulled out a research paper or anything, but he just said it. And then I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, your resistance drops, you know, like getting knocked out. You go your career being, having an iron jaw, and then you get, after that first time that fighter gets knocked out, they then all of a sudden, like they start getting knocked out all the fucking time. And I was like, really? Like, I wonder if that's true, because it's definitely true when it comes to getting knocked out, right? Like, I don't know what's going on neurologically, but you see it in boxing and MMA and Muay Thai all the time, all the fucking time. Dudes who are impossible to knock out. And once they've been knocked out once, all of a sudden they're not that difficult to knock out anymore. And I was like, I don't know if that's true, but anyway, it made my ears stick up. I thought it was worth mentioning. Obviously, just because he's Hodja Gracie doesn't mean he's also the fucking goat of medicine.
No, I don't believe it. I straight up do not believe it. I think it's a different mechanism. It's a completely different mechanism. Like when you get knocked out in striking, it's because your brain is hitting your fucking skull. When you pass out because of jiu-jitsu, it's completely different. You're depriving blood to your brain. You're cutting off the supply of blood to your brain. Therefore, you go unconscious. I'm not saying that proves or disproves what Hodges say. I'm just saying that his lack of, like, you cannot draw a parallel. You cannot be like, oh, it's like when in MMA or in boxing, because it's a completely different mechanism of rendering you unconscious, completely different. So yeah. I don't see how you can draw parallel there. It's, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I can see how you draw the parallel in the sense, if all of a sudden neuroscientist came on and they said, no, like, yes, they're two different mechanisms, but they have the same consequences. I can see how there's a parallel. Like, you know, it's a great example to say, yeah, it's like in striking or vice versa. But yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not saying he's correct, or I'm more lean on the side of, I don't know, I'm not saying you're a liar, but I'm also not buying it.
No, he's just pulling that out of his ass. Like, he's not got no proof to that. He's just,
I just thought it'd be worth mentioning. If any fucking scientists, doctors, neurobiologists, whatever.
Nah, just because your name's Gracie doesn't mean you can publish like a fucking nutrition plan or fucking some sort of reference to being knocked out and people take your word for it. It's like the Gracie diet. It's the same shit. It's like,
Yeah,
they don't let Gracie, you, doesn't mean we should listen to you.
Don't let they don't outside let you of jiu jitsu. They don't let you eat banana with acai, bro. Fuck.
Yeah, that's fucked. It's kind of like that. That I know a lot of other people have spoken about this before, and I think I mentioned it. But like black belts in jiu-jitsu, they get a black belt, and because they've mastered something, right? You could definitely make the argument if you're a black belt in jiu-jitsu, you're a master of jiu-jitsu. There's always levels to the game, but you know you are, and you're an expert in jiu-jitsu. And because you're an expert in one field, a lot of the time people start to apply that same mentality to other fields, like. It's, you know, and they start to talk with conviction on things that are outside the realm of jiu-jitsu, but maybe parallel. But it's like, bro, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. It's like when you hear black belts give advice on things like nutrition or things like exercise science. And it's like, bro, you're a black belt in jiu-jitsu. Your skills in jiu-jitsu are great, but you don't know what the fuck you're talking about in this other domain. Like, you're not a black belt in all areas. Maybe it's, I'm not saying, like, before you come after me in the comments, I'm not saying that Hodger doesn't know what he's talking about, but I'm just saying that Hodger doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
But no, I mean, at least you don't see that in other industries. Like, it'd be crazy if people turn to celebrities for political advice and stuff like that.
Yes. it's like Ricky Gervais in his Golden Globe opening monologue, how he's like, come accept your little award, thank you God, and fuck off, don't talk about politics. And then I've seen a mashup of him doing that speech and then showing all the political references and all the speeches that followed it.
It's so funny. There's a slight damned if you do, damned if you don't though as well, right? Because then could make the argument of, well, I am a celebrity and I have this platform. Like, why wouldn't I, if I can use my platform to help this and help that, why wouldn't I? But yeah, it's a whole different.
Yeah. I don't think politics fucking, is helping anybody.
Anyway. But right. I don't know, with the whole, yeah, you reminded me of something. I'm just watching this show at the moment called Painkillers. It's like some of it has been fictionalized, but it's about like the Purdue Pharma and Oxycontin and the drug industry and pharmaceutical industry and hooking patients on fucking heroin and all this crap. Mm. And there was just one kind of line where it's talking about the sales reps interacting with doctors, and one of them, the actress, the character says something along the lines of, yeah, like, but like that person's a doctor, you know, people trust doctors more than they trust, you know, their family, more than they trust the president, more than they trust this person. So, you know, whatever the doctor tells you to do, you do it, sort of thing. Anyway, you just kind of, because this is, I'm only watching it recently, you reminded me of that, right? That sometimes people go, oh, because this person's a black belt, you know, I'm going to trust them with this and that and whatever. And
yeah, it's like an authority bias.
Yeah, you know, which is silly because, I don't know, I wouldn't probably go to some, professional singer and ask for nutrition advice or something, like just because they're really good at singing. I don't know. Maybe I would.
I'll sing you the recipes, bro. All right, shit. Cool.
Well, don't listen to me. I'm just a fucking shitty black belt. I'm not even a real one. I got no good advice except on wrestle-ups and choy bars. That's all I got for you. Guys, thank you so, so much for listening. Episode 165 was a pleasure. Hopefully come 175, Kieran's done some jiu-jitsu and we can talk. Actually, it'll be, you know what? It'll be interesting though. The next, maybe not 175, but let's forecast to 185 when, because I try to some degree, I guess we try not to share what we're working on. I guess it's maybe harder for you because you might be still as, you know, I mean, we're all students of jiu-jitsu, blah, blah, blah. But you know what I mean? Like, obviously it's a bit different. You're going to ask me more questions about techniques and this and that.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting if, let's say 185, if we go that whole period of dedicated training where I'm working on, I've been working on wrestle ups and let's say, I find it hard to think this would happen, that the 10 weeks, 3 months would pass without you cluing in, even without me saying, Kieran, I'm working on wrestle ups. I think when you're back in the country, we train enough together that you would be like, hey, I've never seen you do X guard before, and all of a sudden it's all you're fucking doing. But
yeah.
So I find it hard to believe you wouldn't figure it out yourself, but it would be interesting whether you figure it out or not, because a lot of the discovery that I would have on whatever position technique I'm working on, you would be on certain occasions on the receiving end of that, whether it's you punishing me for mistakes in the process or you getting caught of things that are working for whatever.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting doing these episodes where then I'll say something like, and then I, you know, put my head to the outside for this reason, and you having these moments of, that's why you were fucking doing that. Like, you know, like be interesting.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. I think that would be, I think that would be more entertaining as well.
Maybe more banterful. We'll see. Anyway, stay tuned in 20 episodes time. All right, guys. Thank you. As always, you know where to find us on Instagram at @BeyondJujitsu_podcast, Kieran's Instagram, website, everything, my one. Hit us up wherever. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.